Aaron Mette, could you tell us why you think the OPCW leaks are the most important story you've ever covered?
We're talking about allegations of a cover-up at the world's top chemical weapons watchdog to basically justify U.S. military strikes. And the evidence is overwhelming. So it's certainly the most important story that I've ever covered. And it's just incredible that it continues to be ignored by most of the media. You have this instance where the U.S. bombed Syria in April 2018, along with Britain and France, claiming that Syria was guilty of a chlorine attack. About a year later, in March 2019, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, the OPCW, comes out with a report that aligns with the U.S. narrative that Syria was guilty of a chlorine attack. But then you get this extraordinary series of leaks that which show that the actual OPCW team that went to Syria wrote up a report, found no evidence of a chemical weapons attack, raised major inconsistencies in the claims that chlorine gas was used, but that their report and their findings were censored. And not just censored, but in fact that their superiors tried to basically write a bogus report, a bogus version of their report, falsely suggesting that Syria was guilty. And that led to the standoff internally where the original team, led by the key inspector who wrote the original report, protested the censorship. And that resulted in two extraordinary things. First, a U.S. delegation came to The Hague, met with the team, something that has never happened before, to my knowledge, in OPCW history, and try to convince them to basically ignore their own findings and conclude that Syria was guilty of a chlorine attack. And when that didn't work, the original team was basically taken off of the case and replaced by a so-called core team that consisted mostly of people who didn't even set foot in Syria. And since this has come out, what has happened? The OPCW has refused to address the documented scientific fraud. They refused to meet with the inspectors. And when you have people alleging wrongdoing, and you have documents showing the massive distortions that took place internally, and you have a multi-year refusal to meet with the people lodging the complaint, what does that tell you? It tells you that there is something to hide. And what the OPCW is hiding is its cover-up. So it's basically covering up its own cover-up. And amazingly, the U.S. has been basically complicit in the cover-up because, with the exception of a couple of outlets like the Gray Zone where I work, the story has been completely ignored. So it's a story in itself, just given the facts of it. But then you, compounding that, you have the prevailing media refusal to cover it, which makes it even more important for me to go after it.
To many of us, the U.S. war in Syria has been an abomination and a violation of international law from the beginning, with the covert support of forces that were trying to topple the government. Why is this incident so much more important than the others?
I'm not saying it's more important, but it's just so extensively documented. There are reasons to doubt all the previous allegations of these chemical weapons attacks by Syria. Just on the surface, they make no rational sense. Why would Syria do the one thing that it knows would invite U.S. military intervention, especially if you look at case after case when it's on the brink of victory in the areas involved, as was the case in Douma? But in the case of Douma, you just have this added component of a cover-up at the OPCW. You have the censorship of the investigation that actually got on the ground to investigate this. And all this effort now being made to ignore the inspectors who brought that cover up to light, who challenged it from within. So I'm not saying it's more important. It's just so extensively documented, which makes the prevailing refusal to cover it that much more shameful.
Okay. Can you talk about ARIA formula meetings of the United Nations Security Council that you addressed, first on September 29, 2020, and then April 16, 2021?
Those meetings were held in the context of a prevailing refusal by the OPCW leadership and the states that bombed Syria, the US, UK, and France, to hear from the inspectors. There have been multiple proposals at the OPCW at the executive level to let the dissenting inspectors speak, to let them air the evidence that was suppressed. Those have been blocked. At the UN Security Council, the US and its allies have gone so far as to prevent the first director general of the OPCW, Jose Bustani, from speaking. He was invited to address the council in the fall of 2020 because of two things. One, he was the first chief of the organization, and so he basically designed the protocols that are used in missions like the one in Syria, the one that was suppressed. And also, these dissenting inspectors who were on that Douma mission, they are so senior, they are so veteran with the OPCW that their tenure coincides with Bustani's, going back to the founding of the organization. That's how long the two key dissenting inspectors have been with the organization on two separate tours of duty going back to 1997, 1998, when the organization was founded. So Bustani wanted to come to the UN to speak in support of them and to advocate for them to be heard. What happened to him? He was blocked. So in that context, Russia and China have used a mechanism at the UN Security Council called the ARIA formula, which allows member states to convene meetings on certain topics. So they've done that to address the Duma cover-up, and they've invited people like myself. They've also invited Ian Henderson, who is one of dissenting OPCW inspectors. They've also invited Hans von Sponeck, the former UN Assistant Secretary General, Lawrence Wilkerson, who was the former Chief of Staff to Colin Powell. And all of us have just raised concerns about the cover-up. And that underscores the fact that you have people like Hans von Sponeck and Lawrence Wilkerson raising alarm about this. Just shows that concern about this is not just reduced to people like me and my colleagues at the gray zone, but to some of our world's most experienced and conscientious diplomats. You know, Lawrence Wilkerson has firsthand experience with lies used to justify war. I mean, he helped write that speech for Colin Powell at the UN Security Council to make the phony case for invading Iraq back in 2003. So here he was this year returning to the UN Security Council to actually raise concerns about another pro-war deception, and that is the Syria cover-up at the OPCW. And of course, what was the response from the states that have tried to bury the scandal? They don't address it on the substance. They just say that all of this is the result of Russian disinformation, and they change the topic. They bring up side issues like Alexei Navalny, which, whatever you think about that issue, has nothing to do with the OPCW cover-up. The reason why they don't want to address the cover-up is because the facts are so damning to their narrative, so they just have to try to pretend that it doesn't exist and change the topic.
UN Security Council meetings are usually webcast and saved in the UNSC webcast archives. Is an archive of this meeting available there?
Yes.
Okay, good to know. OPCW Chief Bustani, who lost his job in 2003 at the time of the Iraq War, he was trying to do what Vladimir Putin ultimately did, which was to negotiate an agreement, in his case, an agreement with Saddam Hussein to comply with the Convention on the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. Vladimir Putin seemed to prevent a U.S.-NATO attack in 2013 by actually doing what Jose Bustani was unable to do. Could you talk some more about that?
Well, I'm not sure if the agreement between brokered by Russia to bring Syria into the Chemical Weapons Convention prevented an attack. I mean, that's the official story. But look, the reality is we know from the reporting of Seymour Hersh that U.S. intelligence officials, including James Clapper, came to Obama and told him that the intelligence was not there to find Syria guilty of committing that chemical attack in Ghouta in 2013. In fact, they had ample evidence that it was carried out by the insurgents who had received sarin materials from Turkey. The British military lab Porton Down did an analysis. They found that the sarin found in Ghouta did not match the sarin found in the Syrian government arsenal. So already at the time, the U.S. basically knew that it wasn't Syria. And it was basically people inside the administration pushing for strikes anyway, who really wanted to bomb Syria and take the regime change war even further, pushing Obama to do it. But Obama was basically saved, not even so much by Russia, but by his own intelligence officials telling him that the intelligence wasn't there, because they all knew that it was so implausible that Syria would do it. Why would Syria do the one thing that they knew would invite U.S. military intervention? By the way, why would they do it after they had just invited UN investigators to come into the country to investigate another alleged chemical attack by the insurgents in Syria? So it made no sense. Obama knew that. And having Russia come in to broker this agreement, it was convenient for him. He was able to use that as an official story for why he didn't bomb Syria. But really, the real reason, I think, is because he knew the intelligence wasn't there.
Who made an issue of the OPCW leaks in the European Parliament, and what unfolded there?
That was two members of the European Parliament, Mick Wallace and Claire Daly. And they both questioned Fernando Arias directly about why won't he simply meet with the dissenting inspectors. And he didn't give him a direct answer. He instead told a whole series of lies. He said that he doesn't even know why the Duma report was contested, which is just patently false. Arias himself, if he's managed to ignore somehow all of the leaked documents that have come out, all the media reports on the issue, if he's somehow avoided all that, he received a personal letter from the key dissenting inspector, Dr. Brennan Whelan, who wrote the original report, the one that got doctored and censored. Arias received a letter from Dr. Whelan back in April 2019, before this issue was even public. It was a private letter, just raising Whelan's concerns with the investigation. Whelan wrote this in response to the FANA report that had come out 1 month earlier. And Arias responded to Whelan saying, "I read your letter with great interest." So assuming that that's correct, that he actually read Whelan's letter, there's no way that Arias can now claim that he doesn't know why Whelan and the other dissenting inspectors contested the investigation. So his response to critical questions has been to either avoid them or to make false statements.
From your testimony and Lawrence Wilkerson's, I got the idea that you feel this international institution, the OBCW, and international institutions that are supposed to rule on issues of peace, justice, and democracy, and determine whether or not atrocity reports are true. This is including like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International. Could you say something about the importance of these institutions, even though they've obviously been corrupted at many points?
Even before this serious scandal, we knew that the OPCW was seriously jeopardized in its ability to carry out its functions independently. I mean, what happened to Jose Bustani back before the Iraq War? He was trying to bring in Iraq to the Chemical Weapons Convention. That would have been great for world peace, but would have been a disaster for the Bush administration's plans to invade Iraq, because it would have subjected Iraq to the kinds of inspections that would have undermined the Bush administration's pro-war propaganda. So what did John Bolton do? He personally flew to The Hague, came into the office of Jose Bustani, told him to basically resign, and said to him, "We know where your kids live," which was a physical threat to Bustani's children. Bustani refused to back down. So what did Bolton then do? They then threatened the OPCW's budget, and they bullied enough states into going along. And Bustani actually told me last year in an interview that even if he had survived the vote to keep him in his job, he still would have resigned, because there's no way the OPCW could have functioned without the U.S. budgetary contribution. It just would have been completely gutted. So the U.S., because of its extreme power and financial leverage, was able to bully the OPCW into ousting its first director general. By the way, this happened shortly after Bustani's second term was renewed. So right after the guy gets a unanimous vote of confidence to a second term, John Bolton strolls in, threatens his kids, and manages to get him kicked out because he's standing in the way of the Iraq War. So that right there completely undermined the integrity of the OPCW. And so it's not surprising that 15 years later, the same sort of bullying is repeating itself. The U.S. was able to come in, have a very unusual briefing with the inspectors who went to Syria, meet them face to face, and basically tell them what they think that they should conclude. And according to Bustani, when I spoke to him, he said that that would have never happened under his watch. It's a complete breach of the OPCW's independence. And it also puts the inspectors at risk, because they're not supposed to be identified. They're supposed to be protected and have their privacy secured. So the fact that the OPCW's integrity is now compromised, it's not even in question, especially when you look at what the reaction has been since. In any normal case, when you have allegations of wrongdoing, especially these kinds of allegations, what's the obvious response? Investigate them. At least meet with the whistleblowers who are lodging the allegation. The OPCW basically has refused to acknowledge their existence. The only time they talk about them is to attack them in public and make false statements about them, as I've documented many times at the Gray Zone. So the OPCW is a organization with a major credibility problem. And it doesn't just raise a credibility issue with this particular investigation in Douma, but of all its other investigations in Syria, because it's very clear that there's an agenda here.
Norman Finkelstein said recently, with regard to the ICC, Human Rights Watch, and other international institutions devoted to human rights and international law, that these institutions are fallible because humans are fallible. He even said that 99 of 100 humans are corruptible. But he said these institutions have a lot of status nevertheless. So you have to challenge them when they're wrong and cite them if they actually get something right, instead of dismissing them altogether because of their mistakes. Would you agree?
Yeah, of course. And in the case of the OPCW, the dissenters have been portrayed as people attacking the OPCW, which is not true. They actually believe in the OPCW's mission and purpose very strongly. They've spent a large part of their lives working for it and trying to carry out its noble mission of freeing the world from chemical weapons. What they're doing now is trying to protect it from political influence. So there's no contradiction here in saying that the OPCW has been compromised, but that if that issue is addressed, that it could be a noble institution. It's not irredeemable.
There's really no alternative, is there?
Yeah, there's no alternative. Yeah.
Aaron Mette, thank you for speaking to Pacifica's COVID, Race, and Democracy.
Thank you for having me.